Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is March 12th and we are back, baby. USDC, 97 cents. Depositors will be made whole. Matt, how are you feeling?
We are so back. Should have bought more ETH.
Always should have bought more ETH. The lesson as always. All right, let's rewind. If any people have not been following the market the last couple of days, we've had some news breaking out. There's been like a lifetime of events since what Thursday night, Friday morning-ish?
Yeah.
All centered around, for us, around USDC and Circle, but in the broader world, centered around Silicon Valley Bank.
Yeah.
Matt, what happened with Silicon Valley Bank?
This is the first bank run of our career.
When
POAP.
When POAP. Yeah, I think we were like 15, 16 when Lehman went down.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember listening to it on the radio, but I wasn't really following it as closely as I am this one. But yeah, Silicon Valley Bank faced a bank run. A bunch of people withdrew their money on Thursday, or at least tried to on Thursday and Friday. The feds took over the bank.
They tweeted, or they came out and made a statement like, hey, we're fine. We're going to be fine. Unless there's a bank run.
Yeah.
and then bank run. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess what spurred that announcement is that they tried to raise money initially. They tried to raise a couple billion dollars in capital. I don't even think it was like debt. I think they tried to just like
equity raise.
Yeah, equity raise.
So a bank is required to maintain a minimum amount of cash like on hand in the form of like equity effectively. Precisely for this reason, right? The idea is, you know, fractional reserve banking, what could possibly go wrong, but like let's have an insurance fund just in case. And so Thursday night was really when shit hit the fan, right? So we had the lawsuit against KuCoin alleging that ETH is a security. We had still the fallout from Silvergate that we discussed last weekend, and now Silicon Valley Bank. During the day Friday, they were down, I want to say, 60%.
Mm-hmm.
Across the board, all the banking stocks were basically down.
Yeah.
Primarily led by these like smaller regional banks.
Yeah.
People
got pretty spooked by them having to raise this money, right? They were like, why do you have to do this? Like, are you not meeting your capital requirements? What's going on exactly? That is really what propelled people to first get spooked and then them to have to come out and say like, guys, we're fine. They had this basically, I think it was an investor call where the senior management basically came out and said a bunch of things. And that's where the CEO basically said like, guys, we're fine unless everybody tries to pull their money out all at once. And then obviously what happened is everybody tried to pull their money out all at once. Really what triggered it is a few big VC firms, I think, initially telling all of their portfolio companies to basically run for the exits.
Yeah, Peter Thiel.
Peter Thiel, I think Andreessen, I forgot the third.
There were a couple that basically said, hey guys, don't worry about it. Let's leave our capital in Silicon Valley Bank. And that was not the play. During the day on Friday, it gets announced that FDIC is taking over Silicon Valley Bank, that Monday morning depositors will get up to 250,000 of their, you know, insurable amount, given back to them. And then for the rest, everyone gets like a promissory note effectively. And then they'll figure it out is basically the plan. So they have to auction off these assets, right? Which are like long dated, low interest bearing notes, right?
So what are the assets on Silicon Valley Bank's book? Are they like liquid assets? Because part of it is they service Silicon Valley companies, right? Including startups and also venture capital firms. And part of their business model is to take startup equity, right? So they have a part of their book is like startup equity and also I would assume debt, right? Given to startups.
I mean, I think, you know, there were a lot of deals that looked something like, we're a startup, we raise this cash, where are we going to put it? And Silicon Valley Bank said, put it with us and we'll give you like a line of credit at mm-hmm. like a low interest rate. And so there's a fair amount of like venture debt on the books, but mm-hmm. really the primary issue that people seem to be pointing to is mortgage-backed securities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, the best way I've heard it put is like, look, like think of everyone you know that got a really good mortgage during COVID. You know, they're paying like 1% fixed rate for like on like a 10 or a 30 year mortgage, right? Someone took the other side of that.
Yeah.
And in a lot of cases, that someone wound up being Silicon Valley Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Now they kind of had to, right? Because they were getting all this cash, and I mean, over the last like 2 years, they've absolutely exploded in size of deposits.
I think they're the number one bank in terms of increase in total deposits over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I think they expanded. They had to expand their balance sheet or their total like deposits, right? Like I think it expanded by a couple hundred billion over the last couple of years. So that's and they have to put that cash to work to generate yields to I don't know sustain their business.
Yeah. So you know, like has sort of been the case over the last year. You have to lend that money somewhere,
mm-hmm.
right? And you know, while they weren't lending it to like Three Arrows or whoever. They were buying assets that went down quite a bit in value because anything that bears interest, like, you know, with like, if you're getting 2% and the on a 10 year note and then rates go to 5%, like you're hitting like a 25% like discount in the market value
yeah.
Of that asset. And you can hold it to maturity, but if everyone's running for the exit, you can't yeah. hold it to maturity.
Yeah, yes. Okay, let's explain this real quick. They took that cash that people were giving them. They have to put it to work. They bought mortgage-backed securities and long-dated treasuries, right? Which expire in whatever, like their term that, I don't know, some of them are probably shorter term where it's like less than a year, but some of them, many of them are longer term, like 1 year, 2 years, 5 years. They bought all of those at the exact top of the market, right?
Yeah.
Bonds are super expensive when interest rates are low, and they bought all these things when interest rates were at 0%. And this is where you can kind of start to parse out some of the blame where it's like, okay, you can't make these at 0% interest, like buying all these bonds is kind of a high-risk play, right? You're basically betting that interest rates will stay at 0% or go down. Right.
But they're lower risk than a lot of your other options, right? Like, so if you invest in like high yield bonds, that's like
right.
by nature riskier, right?
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
these are the lowest risk assets, but they were also the ones that paid the least interest.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of it was just timing, right? Like if your business model acquires like a lot of assets or a lot of deposits in, you know, in a cyclical manner, then you're always going to be faced with this issue,
mm.
right? If you don't have a diversified client base and you explode your AUM in, you know, a bull market, you have to deploy those assets somewhere, right? And, you know, like you can't just like sit in cash because you do have to pay people a little bit of yield to incentivize them to keep their cash with you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what we can blame here beyond capitalism.
Mm.
You know, like the thing is like buying long dated treasuries, like it's a duration mismatch for sure.
Yeah.
And so like they could have had much better risk management from a duration perspective.
Yeah.
But in terms of a like creditor or, you know, like lender, like quality, right. It's pretty high quality.
Oh,
stuff,
of course. I mean,
right?
That's the highest quality stuff.
Yeah. It's not like people are, you know, defaulting on their mortgages here. It's
yeah.
just like the duration is super mismatched.
Right.
So
I guess the other question is like, could this happen to any bank?
I mean, in theory, yes. Right.
Yeah.
And the thing that stops it from happening is if it's a systemic risk. So if Silicon Valley Bank, so right now, the FDIC is covering everything up to 250K per depositor, at least the ones that
that's,
are like,
I mean, that's their general
that's
policy.
Standard FDIC insurance. Yeah. But beyond that, they're currently trying to auction off all of their assets,
mm-hmm.
right? And you know, either get someone to like wholesale acquire the bank or sell off all the assets like piecemeal if they can't find someone to acquire the bank.
So what does that do exactly? If somebody acquires the bank or acquires all the assets separately, they sell off all the assets for parts, there will definitely be a haircut, right? Like, let's say they're able to sell all the assets at like, I don't know, 70% of par, 75% of par, right? Mm-hmm. What exactly happens then? Somebody still needs to come in and make up the other 20%, 25%, whatever it is. How does that hole get filled?
So I think the idea is, say they get acquired by a bigger bank like JP Morgan.
Yeah.
Right. JP Morgan has enough cash on hand to meet withdrawal requirements, okay. And then the bank run stops.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't actually have to pay out 100% of the value, right?
Because people will just know, like, okay, JP Morgan has the capital base to pay out all the depositors if people do run for the exits. So, no more bank run. We're good.
Yeah. Now, the other option is if Silicon Valley Bank here is determined to be a systemic risk, that gives the Fed room to, like, backstop, to effectively buy up those assets, you know, at a high enough value that depositors can be made whole.
Mm.
And that's really the question that people are asking themselves now is this big enough to be a systemic risk, or is the government going to let them fail, right? And it's similar to like the debate we were having in 2008, right? So Lehman famously allowed to fail, right? But AIG was not because it was systemic. And you know, you can't, you have to let some people fail,
mm-hmm.
right? Otherwise, there's like enormous moral hazard, and then every bank goes like lending to the riskiest parties they can possibly find in order to generate the most yield,
right?
You know, within like whatever like risk controls the government puts in place.
Yeah.
But you know, if it gets big enough, that's the other thing about say SVB gets acquired by like JP Morgan. JP Morgan, if it were to fail, would be a systemic risk.
And right. Those and would, so they would be backstopped for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Yellen would take issue with the word backstop here, but that's effectively what it is, right?
Come on the pod, Janet.
Come on the pod. Anyone who knows her, let us know.
Look, from one UC Berkeley alumnus to another, come on, Janet. Come on the pod. Okay. So the bigger issue for us.
Yeah.
Our friends at Circle are banking with Silicon Valley Bank. They announced that SVB is one of the six banks they have been working with, another being Silvergate and another being Signature. Silvergate has already gone down. SVB is in trouble and, And Signature looks like it may be in trouble. But Silicon Valley Bank specifically, it was revealed they had $3.3 billion in deposits with Silicon Valley Bank.
Now, they revealed this after, like, late Friday, right?
Yeah.
So
I think Saturday. I think over the weekend.
It was definitely known as of, well, we went dancing Friday night. True. And,
okay. We knew the size of the hole Friday night. And then on Saturday, they announced that we're still going to allow redemptions starting Monday.
Yeah. So the thing is, before we knew the size of the hole, what we knew is that USDC, right, is backed by 75% 90-day treasuries, right? And those are held in custody at BNY Mellon,
mm-hmm.
right? Who is not at, you know, not under the microscope here. So we're like, okay, great. 75%, good to go. The other 25% is held in cash.
Yeah. So $10 billion in cash. $40 billion is the total market cap of USDC. So that's technically how much US dollars and equivalent. So equivalent being the short dated treasuries that they have. But only $10 billion of that is cash. Like if you think about USDC as a bank, which it kind of functions as, right? It's like, yeah, they have $40 billion in deposits, but $10 billion on hand that they can pay back to customers at any given time, theoretically.
Yep.
Of that, $3.3 billion is missing because it was at Silicon Valley Bank.
Yeah, so prior to this, the peg had been wavering, right? So one core issue is that USDC, like Circle, was using it was using Silvergate primarily as its like fiat on-off ramp. And so following the closure of Silvergate, the creation redemption mechanism was like paused. And so at that point, USDC became a little bit like GBTC. It was like a closed-ended fund that theoretically was backed by something, but could actually trade at a discount to that value.
Right.
That was, you know, all of this was enough for the, you know, we're all looking at this. We're like, okay, $10 billion. We don't know how much is in which bank. We know that there's six, two down, four to go, right? And then at that, you know, like Friday around 5 p.m., the USDC peg started to waver. Went to 99.5, went to 98, back to 99. And then, you know, at one point hit as low as like 97. And then when the size of the hole got revealed, it took a pretty steep drop. Because if you assume that that $3.3 billion is completely written off to zero, it would get you a fair value per USDC of like 91, 92 cents.
Yeah.
And it sold off, of course, because this is crypto, to 88 cents.
Classic.
Yeah, like who's selling at 89 cents? You have to ask. So, you know, then the question is, okay, of that $3.3 billion, how much do we need to mark this thing down by?
Right.
And you know, like if they're gonna open up withdrawals one to one, which they kind of do have to in order to like create that customer confidence, right? Mm-hmm. How much? Like there's a race now. There are two things that are going to happen at the same time. The first thing is that arbitrageurs will come in and buy USDC up to the point where it's priced at a dollar in order to like convert that
immediately to make a 2-3% return. Because right now it's trading at 97 cents on the dollar. So if you're a massive fund or whatever, and you really want to arb this in size, this is one of the easiest plays, right? You get as much liquidity as possible. Buy up USDC on the open market until it hits like whatever 99 point whatever, until like, you know, your gas fees and all these transaction fees don't make sense for you to do it, and you buy as much as possible and you redeem it for US dollars, and you've immediately made like 1-3% whatever you've made, right? Now the risk is that Circle doesn't have enough cash on hand to keep that same, like to keep honoring that same exact trade, as long as USDC is trading at a discount beyond the initial like $7 billion that they have free right now.
Yeah. Right? So that's the question, right? So which one happens first? USDC hits its peg again at a dollar and customer confidence goes to 100% and nobody dumps USDC anymore. So this, you know, you have the arbitrager like mechanism pushing the price up, or on the other hand, you have Circle running out of cash.
Yeah.
Right. And now they have a lot of assets that not a lot of it is liquid US dollars right now. But you know, they could sell 90-day treasuries haven't taken nearly as big of a hit as something like Silicon Valley Bank. Like,
yeah,
you know,
So if they needed to, basically what you're saying is that if they needed to sell their short-term like treasuries, they could sell them at like 98 cents on the dollar, let's say, or like 99 cents on the dollar or like whatever. Right?
Yeah.
Because somebody's willing to wait that duration.
Yeah, exactly. 90 days is just like not that long.
Yeah.
Right? So,
and that remaining 1-2%, whatever, they have enough cash on hand, or they have enough like in their reserve from, you know, fees that they've made, in interest they've collected,
yeah,
or they can just raise some capital to make up that couple percentage points.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Circle is a very strong business model, right? It's effectively a bank, but they don't have to pay any interest to depositors, right? Beyond that, I want to say their capital requirements are not the same as a bank. And there's a lot of debate as to whether they should be. But they basically can extract as much value as a bank, if not more, at least with like reasonable risk measurement, without being subject to the same regulations. So it's a strong, high cash flow, healthy like business model. And you know, it clears something like a few hundred million in revenue every year. Depending on interest rates, right? So you've got to think they probably have enough cash on hand to meet the, you know, 1-2% shortfall that they would take from liquidating their short-term treasuries. So it seems like it should be fine. But we've also said that before.
Yeah.
And here's the here's my counter take, right? The bear case on USDC is that as soon as it hits close to a dollar, if I'm a large USDC holder, I'm going to be like, great, let me get out of this.
Right.
Right. It's I'm getting paid nothing to take this risk. And I might as well, like, maybe I can't withdraw directly because I, like, don't have that relationship with Circle, or like, I don't have a Coinbase account, so I can't like swap it or whatever. And so if I have like, say I have like $1 million on chain, right? And it's just sitting in USDC. I'm going to swap that to USDT as soon as I get like a reasonable price on it.
Yeah,
just
because
like, I'm not getting paid to hold that.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not getting paid anything to take that risk. It's the exact same thing as Silicon Valley Bank.
Yeah.
Where, you know, VCs, most VCs were saying, look, you're not getting paid anything marginal to keep your cash in SVB versus somewhere else.
Mm.
Right. So you might as well put it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with USDC. You might as well buy Tether.
So if you want to do a direct redemption of USDC to US dollars in your bank account,
mm-hmm.
you have to have some kind of relationship with Circle, or do they just allow that?
You can do it now through Coinbase directly.
You can, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if there are like limits or what.
I know Coinbase paused that mechanism on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah, it was.
I think on Friday.
It was in tandem with like, I think it's just because Circle also paused.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of,
but that will
same,
be right? allowed again on Monday.
Yeah, that'll be allowed again on Monday. And so, if you're holding USDC here, why continue holding it? It's never going to go to $1.01, right? Like, you're not getting paid any interest on those holdings. You might as well swap it to Tether.
Yeah.
And so my bear case on it is that as like the price goes back toward a dollar,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have a lot of marginal sellers there, or marginal redeemers, liquidators, whatever. And, with no upside on this asset, with no like yield being paid to you to hold it, there's no incentive to like keep those dollars in USDC unless you're like really worried about USDT like physical US dollars.
Right.
It's not like you're making a lot of money yield farming right now.
No.
And so USDC supply could contract really substantially to the point where like even if like in theory they can get 99 cents on the dollar or whatever, they might not have enough cash on hand tomorrow to meet that requirement.
Right, right. And they have to like pause withdrawals again or pause redemptions.
Which would severely shake investor confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, this is a confidence game just the way, in the same exact way that banks are a confidence game, right?
Yeah.
If everybody's running for the exits at the exact same time, like even if you know that the money is there, right? Like in 90 days that the money is there, it doesn't matter if it's there in 90 days. It needs to be there now.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
So in a way, like it takes like two or three big players to get out of USDC in the same way that they got out of Silicon Valley Bank, right? Like let's say Binance, I think already said that they're no longer supporting USDC pairs.
Well,
right.
Yeah,
let's say they get rid of all their USDC. Let's say, which is like they're incentivized to do that. They have a competitive product to USDC.
Yeah.
Right. So let's say they get out of it. Let's say basically every other exchange and also every other like big player that's holding it decides to get out at the exact same time.
Yeah.
USDC is now short of that cash. Right. Let's say that the gap, like let's say the treasuries that they hold on their balance sheet, they can only get 95 cents on the dollar, right? They're at that point, like if the gap is too big, like they are technically insolvent at that point, right? Like that's an insolvent business, and like the feds can come in and take it over, right?
Yeah, except that they're not FDIC insured.
So that's what I was going to say is like, I don't know which three letter agency then comes in and takes over
the SEC.
Like, selling securities? Like what are they? It's interesting because that's basically the threat now is like basically a bank run on USDC where everybody wants to redeem at the same time and they can't honor the redemptions immediately.
Yeah.
And then they have to sell their reserve on the open market and they can't get par on the open market, and they're like short. They're short a little bit, right?
Yeah.
They would have the, technically that business is insolvent. Like they can go out and raise more money, right?
Yeah.
But
I mean, and I think and that's I think what that, they're trying to do.
Exactly. I can't imagine that they're not that trying they're, to raise more. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
Now, it is an attractive business. Circle Equity should be pretty valuable.
So that's what I was going to say, too.
Very low cost of goods sold, very low OPEX, right? It's just like literally just sitting and collecting interest. Does well in a bear market because interest rates are high, and so it does more revenue when rates are high, unlike basically any business in crypto. But in a bull market, every business in crypto does well, and their deposits grow, and so their revenues do well there. The state of the world in which Circle doesn't do well is actually where USDC's supply contracts, right? And that's the risk is like they're in a race now to raise enough capital that they can backstop this so that like on Monday, tomorrow, when one-to-one deposit withdrawal is re-enabled, they have enough cash on hand to meet that liquidity demand.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And the thing that they have kind of, in my opinion, if they made any mistakes, is waiting so long to communicate any kind of any announcements that they have on their side, right? Because going back to the confidence thing, it's like, the reason people would not pull out their money is if the stablecoin is actually stable the whole time, right? You having that go to 88 cents for even a little bit and then like basically staying at around 94, 95 the whole weekend, right? Like that kills confidence, right? So yeah, I think you're right. If it, like right now, people might not, I think a lot of people will try and redeem, right?
Yeah, like if you're a project, let's say, and you raised money in USDC, and your treasury is sitting in USDC, as soon as the one-to-one is enabled, if you can do that, you will. If you're a DAO and you have to do it on-chain, you'll swap to USDT.
Mm-hmm.
If you can get a decent price for it, you'll do it. So I think the game theory there is like no one's incentivized to hold USDC right now, and they have just like every risk, right?
Yeah, I think it's we're gonna see for sure another stress test Monday morning, right? Because right now what's happened is we saw the initial stress test, which is everybody who could selling their USDC for USDT on the open market through Friday night and Saturday morning. But now that Circle has said they're gonna honor redemptions one to one, we're gonna see tons of that happening Monday morning immediately, because those can only happen during banking hours.
Yeah.
And so as soon as that happens, we're going to see tons of people redeeming, the people who couldn't just swap it for USDT, right?
Now there is one more angle of complexity though. So, apparently Circle issued a request to wire their funds out of SVB on Thursday.
Yeah.
And they haven't received the cash yet, but that could be meaningfully positive for them.
But here's the thing, like even like let's say you assume that they get the $3.3 billion cash, they still only have about $10 billion on hand, right? And yeah, 3.3 is not like nothing, it's a ton of cash, right? So it helps quite a bit, but it's like that's not, I mean, that's like 5, you know, it's like 6%, 7%. Of their total.
But at that point, like, the issue with the 3.3 that the rest of the AUM doesn't have is that some of it's gone, right? If they don't get their cash out of SVB the way that they requested it to get out on Thursday, then some of that 3.3 is just to zero. It might be a 5% haircut. It might be a 10% haircut. It might be 100%. We have no idea. It's probably, you know, if you believe random people that I follow on Twitter, it's probably in the 85 to 95%
range.
But if you, you know, if you're trying to underwrite this risk, it's greater than zero, right? If they get the $3.3 billion out 100%, 100% is a very different number from 85%, right? 100% is just like, okay, this isn't an issue that actually affected USDC. And they can continue operating business as usual. Obviously, there's going to be like a stress test, but it doesn't turn into a full-blown like bank run.
I think. The thing is with with Circle, it's like they're kind of margins, right? Like they're operating in such like very thin margin, right? Where it's like, if they don't have access to their cash immediately and people run to the exits, like, they could be insolvent very quickly.
Yeah, like, but the upside is, though, that, like, even their illiquid assets are not marked down nearly as much as someone
else. No, they're not. Yeah, yeah.
Right. No. So it might be, like, it might be bumpy, but they could get, you know, likely almost all of the cash that they need to, even if every single USDC in circulation gets redeemed.
Yeah. Like, do you think they would, like, just have the cash, or they would have to raise it?
I don't know. I don't know how much they raised. I know that they were, like, a real darling with, like, a lot of, like, big, like, traditional finance, like, investors, because it's a product they can really understand.
For
right?
sure.
So I think that, like, if you're looking for a way to get exposure to the growth of the crypto world in a relatively safe way, using a business model that you already know, like, Circle Equity is a pretty easy investment to make.
Yeah.
And basically all you have to underwrite is, like, 90-day, like, you know, treasury risk.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
So, okay. So what are you looking for now with Circle tomorrow and both, like, SVB and how this situation plays out?
So the first thing is, do they get that cash? Are they going to receive the cash that they requested to wire?
Because they said they started the withdrawal process Thursday, and Silicon Valley Bank said, or the FDIC said, that those withdrawals that were sent before Friday 8 a.m. would be processed on Monday or this week, within the next 2 to 3 days. So,
yeah. You know, from a just, like, purely, like, speculation standpoint, there's very limited upside, right? Like, at 88 cents, you're like, all right, this is, like, clearly underpriced, right? Mm-hmm. At 97 cents, where it's sitting now, you're like, man, am I really going to, like, lever up and try to squeeze that last 3%, like, hoping that there's no hiccups in the withdrawal process and that, like, the cash actually hits the bank for these guys on the other end of that wire? Probably not.
Yeah.
But the first thing you're looking for is, like, is the money going to hit, mm-hmm. right? The second thing you're looking for is, what is the volume of, like, deposit withdrawal look like? Obviously no deposits, right? But, what does that look like? You know, is it one large player coming in and arming this to death, like, with, like, a couple of large transactions? Is it, you know, a whole bunch of, like, retail, like, playing the ARB opportunity here?
Yeah.
So that'll be really interesting to track. Gas fees, where do gas fees go? I mean, there's, you know, like, so this is one really amazing thing about ETH, right? Is that every time there's volatility, upside or downside, gas fees spike, mm-hmm. right? The burn is just increased, the circulating supply of ETH goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And so ETH is now sitting at, since the merge, it's hit an annualized burn rate of about 1%.
Mm.
That's insane. Mm-hmm. That's like, that's not zero the way Bitcoin is in the long term. That's negative.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, the whole thing is just, like, super bullish ETH, if you ask me, but I've been sold on this for a while.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think? What are you looking for?
Yeah, mostly, first of all, like, just generally, if the feds come in and backstop all of the depositors at Silicon Valley Bank, just generally speaking, in that case, Circle is fine on the $3.3 billion one way or the other.
Yeah.
Basically where the $3.3 billion ends up, that's big. And then, like, how many people actually rush to the exits and try and redeem? And then the other thing is just, I don't know, like, in general, what happens to the usage and the trust that people have in USDC? Like, you saw the Curve pool basically get emptied completely this weekend. People are really not feeling too hot about it. I think, like, I don't know, it's the most trusted stablecoin, by a lot of people, but I don't know, like, maybe that just doesn't last anymore. Like, it was institutions saying, like, Circle is, you know, like, fail-proof in that sense, but it's like, if you can't maintain the peg and it, like a whole weekend goes by and you're, you know, you kind of lose that trust, I don't know, like, are people going to be keen to use that product in the future?
I mean, what happened with Tether?
What do you mean?
At one point, wasn't it revealed that Tether was like under collateralized?
Yeah.
Well, how did that play out?
I think they launched a token to basically like make up the gap or something like that. And then they raised some funds.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the token mooned, right?
Yeah, yeah. Token mooned initially and then it came back down. yeah. Tether has had a bunch of issues and Tether has also traded as low as like 85 cents in the past.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Like many years ago. I mean, Tether's been around for like 6 or 7 years. So yeah, they've got longer history, but. It has traded very low in the past and then come back up, but that's kind of the deal with Tether, right? It's like part of the mystery is like, are they fully backed? Are they not? And now people are like,
I'd rather have something that I don't know than something that I know is at risk.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's basically the bet of swapping USDC to Tether right now. It's fascinating, right? Because you would think that like transparency would make your asset more trustable, safer, more pegged. And in this scenario, the opacity of Tether like really made it a much more attractive asset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also like, I don't think if it's just the opacity, I think it's also the team consistently like going out and saying like, guys, we have the assets, like here are our reserves, like every quarter coming out and, you know, putting the stuff out and, basically like fighting to maintain the peg, like literally just continuously fighting to maintain the peg. Basically the opposite of what Circle just did.
Well, yeah. I mean, so Circle never had to fight as hard to maintain the peg because they had like real like transparency.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, on the other hand, like as soon as you hit some issue that might impact the peg, it's like known to everyone.
Yeah. Hmm. True.
And then DAI as well.
Oh, right? Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, DAI, I think we're talking, you're just saying like 75% of DAI supply is backed by USDC. Mm-hmm. So DAI depegged as well. DAI's been trading basically neck and neck with USDC this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, I was talking to someone who's like, dude, no, like Maker, so Maker in their code base, they have an oracle for ETH price, right? Because if you're going to mint DAI against ETH loans,
mm-hmm.
you have to know like what the fair value of ETH is mm-hmm. in order to like set up those liquidations. They also have a price oracle. I didn't even know this for USDC. Mm-hmm. It wasn't hard coded in. Yeah. It's for reasons like this, that like, you know, a lot of people had minted DAI against USDC and depending on your leverage, you could have gotten liquidated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Selling more USDC right. into the market, which in turn sends DAI lower. Pretty interesting.
What do you think happens to DAI now? Like, do people completely lose confidence in DAI, or does DAI have to switch back to like being a single collateral stablecoin, or like what, you know, like are they gonna not use USDC anymore as collateral? Like what do you think happens there?
It's a great question. I mean, it's too late now, right?
To not accept USDC
anymore, right? I think, you know, this is like a debate within the Maker community at large. Like, you know, how much do we want to allow our decentralized stablecoin to be backed by a centralized stablecoin?
Yeah.
Right. You know, the DAI model generally worked with just ETH as the backing asset. But a lot of people thought that this would actually, you know, that accepting USDC would decrease the risk. Mm. And so, you know, but in this case, it actually increased the risk, right? To the point where DAI did lose its peg and it still remains depegged.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting, like, thought experiment is like, what's going to happen now? I would say a lot of the DAI community, or a lot of the Maker community probably says, look, we're putting our foot down. We're only going to use ETH and we're forking the code base.
Yeah.
And you get like, you know, ETH DAI or, you know, Algo DAI or something. But overall, I don't know.
Hmm.
You know, DAI's in an interesting game because it's kind of similar to USDC, where like the more DAI that gets minted, the more revenue they make,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you want to increase the supply as much as possible, and allowing people to mint DAI versus USDC did enable that, right? They've seen a huge amount of supply growth as a result of like enabling USDC as collateral. And they can run it with like, you know, much like, much more aggressive, like safety measures in place versus like a volatile asset like ETH, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, and, you know, the whole model for a stablecoin is like, try to get it as many places as possible. Mm-hmm. Try to make it liquid and useful in day-to-day usage.
Yeah.
And that was the initial goal of UST, right? Where, like, unfortunately, the most useful place to put UST was actually in Anchor.
Anchor,
right?
Yeah.
But had they managed to incentivize its usage somewhere else where it was, like, to the point where it became, like, the most liquid pair against, like, crypto assets in, say, Uniswap, then they could have hit the, like, actual real-world usage where a bank run, like, is much less likely.
Mm.
With DAI, that's another goal, right? Is, like, get as much DAI into existence as possible, get it into as many places as possible, make it the liquid asset as much as possible. And then, you know, you can enjoy the benefits that, like, an actual useful stablecoin has. So you can argue that, like, increasing the circulating supply of DAI is, like, one of its primary goals. But you can also argue that, like, and Maker does this, you know, pretty consistently, they're all about safety,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, we're in this really crazy state of the world where USDC could be seen as less safe.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, if you want a true decentralized stablecoin, you can't really have a centralized stablecoin being the main reserve asset, right? Like, it can maybe be a small part of it, but having that be the main reserve asset is... it seems to me to be quite risky. Yeah, I guess a lot of questions to come. Monday morning will be interesting. I think it's mainly down to, like, the redemptions that do get processed, or, like, that start to get requested, and then really, like, I don't know what happens to the peg thereafter, and it'll really just reveal the confidence people still have in USDC.
Yeah. I mean, I guess there's, like, one other area to talk about, which is other protocols that are, you know, so obviously Maker, DYDX as well, right? So DYDX is, like, only crypto asset really is USDC. Everything else on that protocol is synthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, Gains Network, their base asset is DAI. So the pairs on these exchanges have to be trading much higher, right? And, like, if you're, like, a market maker, like, you probably, you know, hopefully you coded in the fact that maybe USDC wouldn't be worth $1.
Yeah, right.
Because what you're doing is you're collecting the funding rate, right? So you create synthetic on one side, and then you go long or short to hedge it out on a centralized exchange. And so hopefully you're, like, not absolutely, like, messed up by, like, having, like, a 12% mismatch on the assets when USDC goes to 88 cents.
Mm. We are all duration mismatch experts now. you got anything else, Matt?
No, I think tomorrow morning is going to be one of the more interesting days to be alive in crypto.
Yeah.
And I've said it before, I'll say it again. I am so grateful to be able to work in this space where these sorts of just, like, wildly interesting things happen. And, you know, it's a real time to be alive.
What a time to be alive. Thank you, everyone, for joining the show. This has been another Decent Crypto Recap. We'll be back in a few days with maybe another update on the USDC situation if it seems pertinent. Otherwise, we'll do a deep dive. Have a good weekend, everybody, and until next time, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.